This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we turn now to state government. Just 2 weeks remain in the spring legislative session, at least if lawmakers stick to the schedule they put out earlier this year. A number of interesting bills have already been passed to the governor, but major issues remain. Meanwhile, in Chicago, a jury convicted four allies of former House Speaker Michael Madigan. They were found guilty of conspiring to bribe the man who was once arguably the most powerful politician in Illinois. Joining me to talk about all of this are two reporters who have been following it all closely. Jeremy Gorner covers the State House for the Chicago Tribune, and Hannah Meisel is a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Jeremy, Hannah, thank you so much for being with us again on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
So, Jeremy, I have always said the most important thing state government does every year is passing a budget. So let's start with state finances. There's been a big downward projection in state revenue, which is how much money Illinois collects in taxes. Can you talk about that and some of the other financial pressures that are growing on state government?
Well, probably the most high-profile pressure, Brian, right now is what to do about a Medicaid-style program to cover immigrants who are 65 and older, who are in the country without legal permission, or who have green cards but haven't completed the five-year waiting period. You know, this was a program established in 2020, and it was the cost in the budget was initially estimated at about $220 million. For Governor Pritzker's fiscal 2024 budget proposal, but basically that estimate in the last 3 months has grown fivefold, swelling to $1.1 billion. It's actually threatening to blow a big hole in the governor's proposal right now. This program that was created in 2020 has been expanded twice. You know, it had the pertained to obviously non-citizens who were 65 and older. Then it was expanded to those, 42 and older. But after everything, that I just said, basically, there's a newer proposal that's not even taken into account that would open the program to anyone who's 19 and older, between like 19 and 42. And the Pritzker administration has estimated that that would cost an additional $380 million in the first year. So this is a big hole, obviously, that Democrats are concerned about. Republicans have been pretty vocal about this in the last few weeks. And, of course, the big thing that they're concerned about is, there's not going to be a federal match on these funds, which means, from what Republicans have said is that this could come out of the would have to come out of the general revenue fund. And the concern there is that it could deprive other Illinois, citizens who are, quote unquote, vulnerable, as Republicans say, like developmentally disabled, who are part of DCF, part of the child welfare system, could provide those agencies with much needed funding.
Crowding out, I think, is the term that budget people
use. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So
go ahead.
No. So that's been probably the most high profile item on the budget.
Definitely
the last month.
Well, Hannah, let's stick with this point just briefly. Is it possible to separate out the budget concerns here from the broader debate over immigration and, the big divide between Republicans and Democrats on that issue?
I don't think so. I'm old enough to remember 10 years ago, the so-called Gang of Eight, when there was still hope on, some sort of national bipartisan, path to citizenship, big ticket immigration reform. But, our political environment has changed such, in the Donald Trump era that there is, there's no hope of that. And so, this being a kind of surprise budget hole, it's kind of wild that, now 3 years on, we're discovering that the initial estimates were not even really sure what they were based on. And of course, we have this growing issue in the last, was it 8 months, of governors like Greg Abbott from Texas sending busloads of migrants who are crossing the southern border to Chicago in a kind of, words I can't say on the radio, kind of a middle finger to blue cities you know, liberal cities like Chicago, and you know, saying like, now you're gonna, here's where the rubber meets the road. And it's kind of a, of course, you know, no concern for these folks as individuals, but this is a program that was, like Jeremy said, in 2020, initially for seniors 65 and over. It's been expanded twice. And it just seems like we don't, for so many budget, you know, especially bigger budget programs, there's supposed to be due diligence. There's supposed to be, you know, pretty scientific accounting of what the ultimate cost may be. But to have it grow this much, you know, I think it's dangerous for Democrats. And of course, you know, there's many, many Democrats, especially the program's, you know, remaining sponsor, Delia Ramirez, has since moved on to Congress. But Omar Aquino in the state Senate, you know, young progressive Latino leader, you know, he is defending the program, but it is hard for Democrats to, you know, certainly back the favored expansion of folks, you know, 18 to 42 that has been proposed, especially now that this budget kind of misaccounting has been revealed.
Yeah. So, and it'll be interesting to hear where those projections went wrong. Jeremy, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but can you just briefly tell us about, you know what, actually, let me strike that. We're just going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this when we return. Let me just tell listeners, we do love hearing what you think about what we talk about on the program. You can join us in real time today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. But if you don't feel like calling in live, maybe you want to let us know after the fact. We still love hearing from you. We have a voicemail line that's up 24/7. We also have an email address, talk@21stshow.org. You can find all the ways to contact us directly or through social media. It's all on our website, which is, again, 21stshow.org, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find a link to our podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk more about state government. Illinois legislators are entering the culture war over books and libraries, plus a major court finding in Chicago, finding four allies of former House Speaker Michael Madigan guilty of attempting to influence and bribe the former speaker. His trial is set for next year. We're going to talk about all that when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about state government, things that have been happening in the Illinois General Assembly as lawmakers have just about 2 weeks remaining in their spring legislative session, plus a conviction of four allies of former House Speaker Michael Madigan. Some have dubbed them the ComEd Four, found guilty of conspiring to bribe the former speaker, who, of course, is accused of wrongdoing. His trial is set for next year. We're talking about all this with Hannah Meisel from Capital News Illinois and Jeremy Gorner with the Chicago Tribune. We'll get to the trial in just a moment. Jeremy, I want to talk briefly about a piece of legislation that got a lot of attention last week. Illinois lawmakers entering the fray in the so-called culture wars, library books. Talk about what that legislation would do.
Yeah, Brian, so this legislation would cut off state grants to public and school libraries if they are found to have banned books. And this is based on a so-called Bill of Rights from the American Library Association. I say so-called, obviously, to distinguish it from the U.S. Constitution Bill of Rights. And basically, among what this Bill of Rights dictates is books cannot be removed from shelves for, quote, partisan or doctrinal reasons. That's among, you know, one of the, you know, one of the conditions in the Bill of Rights. And that was codified into this legislation that either libraries should follow this Bill of Rights or come up with their own written policies against book bans. You know, this was a piece of legislation that was initiated by Secretary of State Alexei Janulius. It's an issue, as you kind of touched on, Brian. It's amplified partisan divides, you know, across the country provoked intense debates over censorship, school curriculum, and how much say that parents can have over their child's education. You know, it's an issue that's all related. But as far as the Secretary of State could tell, they haven't seen any other states pass legislation that actually protects, that actually would, you know, deny libraries, you know, public libraries across the state funding, you know, if it's found that they ban books. Now, the question is why the Secretary of State? Well, Janulius also serves as the state librarian. You know, basically every year the Secretary of State, they award millions upon, you know, millions. They're projected to award more than $50 million in library grants this year alone, by the end of June. So this could definitely be what, you know, some observers say could be somewhat impactful depending on, you know, the demand for these libraries. But basically, what opponents have said to this legislation have said that this amounts to overreach. The phrase they keep using is local control. You have local elected, you have local library boards that basically select what books belong on shelves. Janulius has made it clear that this legislation wouldn't, you know, get in the way of that process. It would only basically pertain to if books are already on the shelves and then they are removed or banned. But, you know, as far as nationally and including some Republicans and others who are opposed to this legislation, the opponents will say that this doesn't have anything to do with book bans. This has to do with keeping children away from pornography or obscene imagery or obscene content that could be in these books. And of course, the flip side to that, the debate is that, you know, parents will say, well, what could be right for my child isn't right for, you know, could not be right for others. And there shouldn't be like a uniform ban because of it. So this is something that's not just, we haven't really heard stories about book bans in Illinois. We've heard some, but you know, we've heard about it more really elsewhere in the country. But it appears obviously as in response to these culture wars, as we've been talking about, this was, yeah, you know, obviously an attempt at Janulius being proactive at, you know, trying to see what he can do, you know, as the state librarian on this issue.
Yeah, and definitely Democrats entering the fray from the side opposite the one that often makes the news around the country. All right, let's turn now to that bribery trial I was talking about. Hannah, you spent, several weeks? Is it several months at this point in the courthouse in Chicago? Can you just briefly remind us, who were the four individuals in this case? What were they convicted of?
Well, for the record, it was 7.5 weeks. And standing trial, I was there every day. Standing trial was the former CEO for the Northern Illinois Electric Utility Commonwealth Edison, Ann Promajori, and then three ex-lobbyists for the utility, Mike McLean, John Hooker, Jay Doherty. It was a very complicated trial, but basically what it boiled down to was the government alleged that these four, you know, officials of ComEd, they took Mike Madigan's requests for, you know, to find jobs and contracts for his allies within ComEd, which, you know, being a regulated monopoly as a utility is, it has you know, plenty of jobs available. It's always going to be there. It's a pretty large employer, like 6,500 employees concentrated in Northeast Illinois. So government alleges that Madigan made repeated requests for jobs and contracts, and they zoomed in on, you know, basically a handful of folks who basically did little to no work as subcontractors, you know, under lobbyists who contracted with ComEd. They really hammered that home. And it, from what we heard from the jury after the verdict came down on Tuesday, that's really what struck a nerve, because, you know, regular people, they don't, it's hard enough to kind of get people who aren't in politics to kind of understand the weirdness of politics. You know, lobbyists who are doing nothing wrong, they're working really hard, they still, especially really good contract lobbyists, they often have, you know, entire stretches of weeks off, especially in the summer. So, you know, multiply that by the fact that, it, you know, the government basically proved these people were doing little to no work for ComEd. And then a handful of other contracts for Madigan allies. And the government alleged that through that, the ComEd was able to curry favor with Speaker Madigan, who famously really disliked utilities, especially ComEd, who had, you know, kind of crossed him a number of years prior in the early 2000s. And they were able to get three pieces of key legislation over the finish line in Springfield from 2011 to 2019 and block some other legislation, you know, that they found disfavorable. And in the end, the jury found all of four of the defendants guilty on all of the counts that they were accused of. It was a lengthy jury deliberation, leaving a lot of people to believe, especially with the questions that the jury was asking, that, you know, maybe they would indeed, you know, at least let one of them off on a few counts. But in the end, pretty striking decision by the jury there.
Jeremy, you covered the reaction from lawmakers. The verdict came down while they were meeting in Springfield. What did you hear there? What stood out to you?
They were just leaving. The Democrats were just leaving their caucus right as the verdicts were read. And, you know, of course, myself and other reporters were trying to get reaction from a number of Democrats who really didn't want to talk about it. There were a couple of Democrats, though, who were willing to do so. And what they were saying is, you know, I think that the theme that this, what this really highlighted were, you know, the ethics laws that were passed after, you know, after Speaker Madigan left the General Assembly, shortly after Madigan left office and before he was indicted, you know, in his own case involving ComEd, you know, the legislature passed a series of reforms that were aimed to prevent lawmakers from lobbying their former colleagues, like right after leaving office. And this required, among other things, you know, additional financial disclosures from officials on personal financial interests. And it allowed for a legislative inspector general to initiate investigations. But of course, there was a lot of criticisms that these, you know, from good government groups and even among others, that these laws don't go far enough. I mean, among the criticisms is that the changes didn't give the legislative IG enough independence. I know Carol Pope, the former legislative IG, was, you know, I believe her quote is that these changes amount to a paper tiger, I believe it was. If Hannah, correct me if I'm wrong, please. But
no, you're right.
Yeah, a lot of lawmakers didn't want to talk about this, but the ones who did basically thinks that this does send a message that, you know, that the verdicts, you know, last week do send a message, you know, basically that this is unhealthy for democracy. It's important to restore government. That's like what Speaker Welch and Senate President Harmon said. I believe Harmon's quote was, he called this behavior shockingly gluttonous and unhealthy to democracy. But a couple other lawmakers were saying that they think it's too early to tell whether the ethics laws that were, you know, that the ethics legislation that was passed in the last few years, whether it's going to have a good effect or a bad effect. They just think that it's too soon. One lawmaker I spoke to said that she really hopes that the verdicts don't discourage, you know, lobbyists and grassroots organizations who come to Springfield day in and day out from pushing their message on lawmakers. They don't, you know, they just hope that they're, you know, because lawmakers still feel like they need to work together with lobbyists and grassroots groups, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They just hope that it doesn't have that kind of negative effect. But at the same time, you know, as far as like whether these ethics laws work, the general consensus seems is that it's too early and only time will tell.
Hannah Meisel, I like to ask reporters to predict the future, but what do you see, what have you heard of this conviction portending for former Speaker Michael Madigan in about a minute, if you can?
Sure. So yeah. Madigan faces his own racketeering trial next year, starting April 1st. It's scheduled for at least at this moment. And he faces some of those charges alongside Mike McClain, who was, you know, of course, convicted last week in this ComEd 4 trial. Mike McClain and Mike Madigan go back decades, a friendship that stems from when they were both lawmakers in the Illinois House in the 1970s. And, you know, looking at the result of this trial, it doesn't look all that great for Madigan because, you know, from the beginning, from when he was named public official A before these folks were even indicted in 2020, he's just claimed this entire time that all he's guilty of is making job recommendations, and that's not a crime at all. And, you know, I think a lot of those, the contours of that defense were tested in this trial and ultimately came up short.
Hannah Meisel is with Capital News Illinois. Jeremy Gorner is with the Chicago Tribune. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brian.
Before we go, we want to recognize the passing of a man who dedicated much of his life to public service. Newton Minow was an attorney and educator who spent much of his life in Illinois. He worked for then-governor and repeat Democratic presidential candidate Adlai Stevenson, but he's arguably best known for describing television as a vast wasteland. That phrase came in a speech he delivered in 1961 after he'd been appointed chairman of the Federal Communications Commission by President Kennedy. The speech was delivered in the heart of the Lion's Den to a meeting of television executives.
I invite each of you to sit down in front of your own television set when your station goes on the air and stay there for a day without a book, without a magazine, without a newspaper, without a profit and loss sheet or a rating book to distract you. Keep your eyes glued to that set until the station signs off. I can assure you that what you will observe is a vast wasteland. You will see a procession of game shows, formula comedies about totally unbelievable families, blood and thunder, mayhem, violence, sadism, murder, Western bad men, Western good men, private eyes, gangsters, more violence and cartoons. And endlessly commercials, many screaming, cajoling, and offending, and most of all, boredom.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. After his government service, Minow worked as an attorney and later a professor of communications law and policy at Northwestern. He was also a longtime leader in the Commission on Presidential Debates. Newton Minow died Saturday at his home in Chicago. He was 97 years old. And that is our time for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the ongoing troubles in the athletic department at Illinois State University, plus a conversation with author Jesse Singer, whose book is There Are No Accidents, The Deadly Rise of Injury and Disaster, Who Profits and Who Pays the Price. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. If you want to get a podcast of our program, just search for us on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Just type in The 21st Show. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.